ॐ अग्निर्मिनन्दस्य निरञ्जनसुलभय चक्षुसुमिलितञ्जेन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः श्रीचैतन्यमनुभीष्टं स्थपितं येन उच्यते सायं रूपकदमयं ददति सर्वनैतिकम्। पञ्चगोपजुभिश्च कृपसिन्धुभिश्च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो नमो नमः। The question that Sukadeva Goswami asked to, that Prickett Maharaj asked to Sukadeva Goswami at the beginning of this chapter was how the living entity is suffering in hell. Really, really deeply suffering, how they could be freed from such suffering, or rather, how they could be freed from having to face such suffering. How could they become purified from the reactions to the sinful activities that they perform, which will cause them to suffer horribly? So in reply, Sukadeva Goswami ultimately said, Kechit kevalaya bhaktya narayana parayana agam dunvanti karsneya niharam iva paskaram. That there are some fortunate souls who perform bhakti, pure bhakti, kevala bhakti. And they are performing that bhakti in a very dear to Vasudeva, Narayan, Parayan, they're very dear to him. And then agam, the sinful activities, agam karsneya is completely removed, niharam iva bhaskaram, just like the sun cuts, removes completely all of the fog, the early morning fog. And the previous example he gave of how jnan purifies was how it burns, like just as jnan, just as fire burns all everything beneath bamboo. And even the fire may burn the bamboo itself. But yet, because the roots are present still, the fire does not destroy the root, that the bamboo will again grow. So similarly, although the sins may be removed, sinful reactions may be removed through jnana, the most deep sinful tendency, the tendency to act sinfully on the deepest level is not removed, and therefore the sinful actions must eventually come, and therefore the sinful reactions must eventually come. But bhakti is on a different level. Niyaram iva bhaskara, as the sun removes the fog completely, dissipates completely, nothing is left. So then in pursuance of this, Sukadeva Goswami narrates the pastime of Ajameel. Now Ajameel was born in a Brahmin family, very pure lad, very nice young man, and he got himself into trouble. And he lived a very sinful life, but his saving grace was that when he was 88 years old and he was dying, he was calling out to his youngest son, whom he loved very much, and he had so many times called out his name, and his son's name was Narayan. So when dying, he called out Narayan, Narayan, with his full consciousness, meaning his son actually. So then when it was time for him to leave his body, that means time for the soul to be pulled from his body, the Yamadutas arrive, very fierce, distorted looking fellows, servants of Yamaraj, the Lord of Death, deputed to, or empowered to remove the soul from the body and then take those souls to Yamaraj for punishment. But amazingly enough, while this was happening, the servants of Lord Vishnu came and said, "Halt, stop, do not take him. Brajamila is so sinful. We must take him for punishment." Vishnu said, "No. You don't know who is fit to be punished, who is not fit to be punished. You explain to us. What are the principles of religion by which one discriminates sinful act from pious act? Who is fit to be punished? Who is not fit to be punished? You explain everything to us, and then we'll see." So the Yamadutas, as we heard yesterday, began to explain. They said, "Veda pranahitam dharma." You want to know what sinful activities are? First, we should understand that the Vedas explain religiosity. This is the source of the standard of what is good, what is bad, what is religious, what is dharma, what is adharma. And what is the authority of the Vedas? They are coming from Lord Narayan. As he is eternal, they are eternal. He is the source of everything, and therefore, as the cause of all causes, he has established the Vedic principles to discriminate between right action and wrong action, to guide living entities so that they perform pious activities. So according to what the Vedas explain, actions in pursuance or actions that are congruent to the Vedic statements, they are pious activities, they are proper activities, they are sinless activities. But on the other hand, activities, the word used was viparyata, opposite to the Vedas, or not in congruence to the Vedic statements, they are sinful. So this is an interesting definition of what is sin and what is not sin. The Vedas give, they prescribe duties, and if we perform our duties properly, that is non-sinful, non-sinful. And if we don't, just simply by not performing our duties properly, that according to the Vedic definition is sin. And sin basically means one is acquiring sinful reactions for suffering. Sin brings suffering. So they're defining in this way. The Vedas come from Lord Narayan. They define pious and impious activities. And everything that every single person does is witnessed by the directions, by the moon, by the daylight, by the night, by the twilight, and ultimately by the super soul. So there's no question of anyone getting away with anything. And then, the Yamadutas describe that that Lord Yamaraj himself is empowered by the super soul to know all this, what everyone has done. And therefore, one situation in the present is actually an accumulation. It is the resultant reaction, rather, of the accumulated activities that one has performed in the past. What we have now, our mentality, the suffering, the enjoyment, whether it's happiness or mixed or complete distress, all that we have now, and the example given was that as the spring of the, that we experience spring in the present. So this denotes just what the springs in the past were like and what the springs will be like in the future, the spring season. So similarly, as we suffer and enjoy to different degrees, different varieties, In the present, this indicates what we've done in the past and what our actions will be like in the future, what the reactions will be like in the future. So in this way, the Yamadutas explain the principles of religion. These are the laws, more or less, the principles underlying who is to be, what is religion, what is irreligion, who is to be punished, who is not to be punished, and how the modes of material nature affect everyone and force them, even against their will, to act even in sinful ways or piously. Some people, when they have to act piously, they're forced by the mode of goodness, and other people, they have to act sinfully. So how trapped we are, so much so that does anyone remember the example of the entrapment of the soul that was given? The silkworm, exactly. The silkworm, by his own power, by his own energy, the saliva, he makes a cocoon around himself, and that cocoon traps him and stops him from acting independently or freely. So similarly, the actions a living entity performs creates a karma that traps him and forces him to act in a specific way. So in this way, the Yamadutas describe the principles of religion and irreligion. Now, after establishing what the principles are, they're going to make their case. They're like the prosecuting attorneys against Yamaraj. They've explained the laws, the principles by which someone is to be judged. Now how, what has this person done? What has Ajamil done? What has Ajamil done? And let us apply these principles that we have just described to the actions of Ajamil. So here's Ajamil. In the beginning, this is text 57. In the beginning, the Brahmana, that means he was born in a very good family, pious family. In the beginning, this Brahmana named Ajamil studied all the Vedic literatures. He was a reservoir of good character, good conduct, good qualities. Firmly established in executing all the Vedic injunctions, he was mild and gentle. And he kept his mind and senses under control. Furthermore, he was always truthful. So what a pious young man. Practically, we won't find anyone like this nowadays. Keeping the mind and senses under control, gentle. How can anyone be like this after being babysat by television and fed the diet of rock and roll? How can anyone grow up gentle, mild, or very, very rarely anyway, and with the mind and senses under control? Furthermore, Ajamil was always truthful, pretty old-fashioned. He knew how to chant the Vedic mantras, and he was also very pure. It means he was situated very much in goodness. Ajamil was very respectful to his spiritual master, the fire god, guests, and elderly members of his household. Indeed, he was free from all false prestige. He was a humble soul, respecting seniors, superiors, very qualified. He was upright, benevolent to all living entities, and well-behaved. He would never speak nonsense or envy anyone. Practically speaking, his character was perfect. And yet there he was, married to a prostitute, ready to be punished for unlimited sinful activities. So how did such a pious soul fall down to this level? So Prabhupada explains in his purport, describing the history of Ajamil's life. Yamadutas related that in the beginning he was a learned scholar of the Vedic literature. He was well behaved, neat and clean. Cleanliness is next to godliness. And he was very kind to everyone. In fact, he had all good qualities. In other words, he was like a perfect Brahmana. A Brahmana is expected to be perfectly pious. to follow all the regulative principles and to have all good qualities. The symptoms of piety are explained in these verses. Srila Varagavacharya comments that dhrita vrata means dhritam vratam stri sangha rahityatmaka brahmacharya rupam. In other words, Ajami will follow the rules and regulations of celibacy as a perfect brahmachari and was very soft-hearted, truthful, clean, and pure. How he fell down in spite of all these qualities and thus came to be threatened with punishment by Yamaraj will be described in the following verses. Once, this brahmana, Ajamil, following the order of his father, went to the forest to collect fruit, flowers, and two kinds of grass called Samit and Kusha. On the way home, he came upon a Sudra, a very lusty fourth-class man, who was shamelessly embracing and kissing a prostitute. The Sudra was smiling, singing, and enjoying as if this were proper behavior. Both the Sudra and the prostitute were drunk. The prostitute's eyes were rolling in intoxication, and her dress had become loose. Such was the condition in which Ajamil saw them. The Sudra, his arm decorated with turmeric powder, which was to increase his desires, was embracing the prostitute. When Ajamil saw her, the dormant lusty desires in his heart awakened, and in illusion, he fell under their control. As far as possible, he patiently tried to remember the instructions of the Shastras not even to see a woman. With the help of this knowledge, and his intellect, because it's the intellect's business to control the mind, and the mind's business is to control the senses. But nowadays, who's the boss? The senses. And the mind says yes. The senses say, give me, I want, I want, I want. And then the mind says yes and grasps it, and we identify with the mind. And then what does the intelligence do? Plots and schemes how to fulfill the desires of the mind that the mind has grasped under the control of the senses. But it's not supposed to be like that. The intelligence is supposed to remember to put things in perspective for the mind. Yes, there may be some enjoyment, but how much suffering will be there if I try to enjoy in this way? How much suffering, what to speak of it being bad for my spiritual life, I'll have to suffer so much for a moment's pleasure. And the mind, therefore, instead of saying yes, say no. And then the senses will fall under control. And the mind is such an amazing creature. It almost has a life of its own, but it's actually like a balloon full of hot air, and that's all. When it wants something completely, and you think this is the most important thing in existence. And then, in 1 second, that big balloon, which was so substantial, can be pierced by another desire, or the mind can flicker or change. And then that very same thing that was the most important of all possible requirements, necessities, has no relevance anymore. This is the nature of it. It can change like that. So he was trained. This boy was trained very well. And he tried his best to control his mind with the intelligence by remembering all the instructions and thereby to control his senses. He tried to control his lusty desires, but because of the force of Cupid within his heart, he failed to control his mind. We'll go back a little and read some of Prabhupada's purports. It's a very sad occurrence, but so common in Kali Yuga. This is what Prabhupada says. While traveling along the public way, Ajameel came upon a fourth-class man and a prostitute who are vividly described here. Drunkenness was sometimes manifest even in bygone ages, although not very frequently. In this age of Kali, however, such sin is to be seen everywhere. For people all over the world have become shameless. Long ago, when he saw the scene of the drunken sudra and the prostitute, Ajameel, who was a perfect brahmachari, was affected. Nowadays, such sin is visible in so many places. And we must consider the position of a brahmachari student who sees such behavior. For such a brahmachari to remain steady is very difficult unless he is extremely strong in following the regulative principles. Nevertheless, if one takes the Krishna consciousness very seriously, he can withstand the provocation created by sin. In our Krishna consciousness movement, we prohibit illicit sex, intoxication, meat-eating, and gambling. In Kali Yuga, a drunk, half-naked woman embracing a drunk man is a very common sight, especially in the Western countries. And restraining oneself after seeing such things is very difficult. Nevertheless, if by the grace of Krishna, one adheres to the regulative principles and chants the Hare Krishna mantra, Krishna will certainly protect him. Indeed, Krishna says that his devotee is never vanquished. Kaunteya pratijani hi name bhakta pranashyati. Therefore, all the disciples practicing Krishna consciousness should obediently follow the regulative principles and remain fixed in chanting the holy name of the Lord. Then there need be no fear. We deserve a song after that one. If we can chant the holy name of the Lord, there need be no fear. Otherwise, in other words, if one doesn't chant the holy name of the Lord in this Kali Yuga, where everything that is sinful and in the mode of passion, ignorance is so dominant. Otherwise, one's position is very dangerous, especially in this Kali Yuga. Purport to text 62, a part of that purport. Lusty desires. Even a fully qualified brahmana, as described above, could not control his lusty desires and restrain himself from pursuing them. Because of the force of materialistic life, to maintain self-control is very difficult unless one is specifically under the protection of the Supreme Personality of Godhead through devotional service. So one's consciousness, one really has to change something very deep, very, very deep, that one has to think oneself a servant very, very deeply and think oneself under the shelter of Krishna. And when there's any provocation, chant Krishna's names and take shelter of him very seriously and very fearfully. Because if we jayato vishaya pungsan sangas tesha pajayate, if one begins to contemplate a desire, an object of the senses, it will start out as a little balloon, and then very quickly that little balloon almost imperceptibly will grow and grow until it's huge and takes over our entire consciousness. So what to do? If to chant at those times, Krishna, 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 chant the names of the Vaishnavas, Prabhupada, Prabhupada. Raghunath Das Goswami, actually Raghunath Das Goswami compares these to lust meaning lusty desires, to like a highwayman, a robber. Why? Because one may be carrying the valuable jewel of these good qualities, like Ajamil was, and the valuable jewel of his Krishna consciousness. And then lust will attempt to steal it, getting bigger and bigger and bigger. The desire is growing and captivating the consciousness. And he says, you call out loudly, Raghunath Das Goswami says, the name of the Bhakavid, the enemy of Bakasura, Krishna. Because Bakasura is crooked. So these desires are very crooked. They promise everything, but deliver nothing, like a balloon. A balloon may have the shape of something, but it has no substance. It's just hot air. So call out the names of the Lord, the Lord's devotees, loudly, and protection will be there. But don't stop. Don't stop calling out. But Prabhupada admits in his purports how difficult it is in Kali Yuga. The men, for the women, for everyone. Old, young. But yet, if we take shelter of Krishna, place ourselves under Krishna's protection, then we can be saved and safe. Text 63. In the same way that the sun and moon are eclipsed by a low planet. What is that low planet? Rahu. Graha Grasto. So the sun and moon give so much light, but they can become eclipsed. So in the same way, the Brahman lost all his good sense. His consciousness became eclipsed, dark. Taking advantage of this situation, he always thought of the prostitute, and within a short time, he took her as a servant in his house and abandoned all the regulative principles of a Brahmana. Thus Ajamil began spending whatever money he had inherited from his father to satisfy the prostitute with various material presentations so that she would remain pleased with him. He gave up all his brahminical activities to satisfy the prostitute. Because his intelligence was pierced by the lustful glances of the prostitute, the victimized Brahmana Ajamil engaged in sinful acts in her association. He even gave up the company of his very beautiful young wife, who came from a very respectable Brahmana family. Although born of a Brahmana family, this rascal, bereft of intelligence because of the prostitute's association, earned money somehow or another, regardless of whether properly or improperly, and used it to maintain the prostitute's sons and daughters. The Brahmana irresponsibly spent his long life transgressing all the rules and regulations of the holy scriptures. This is the Yamadutas are presenting the case against Ajamil. They've described the principles, and now here are the specific breaking of those principles, the specific sinful acts, adharmic acts, irreligious acts, that they're explaining those acts to prove that this person is worthy of being punished and it is our duty to punish him. Therefore, he lived extravagantly, he ate food prepared by a prostitute, and therefore he is full of sins, he is unclean, and is addicted to forbidden activities. This man, Ajamil, did not undergo atonement, because one can remove the effects of sinful activities through atonement. Cannot remove the sinful desire, but the effects, the reactions can be removed. And they're saying that if he paid his fines, undergo the atonement, we wouldn't be here now. But he didn't undergo atonement, and therefore, because of his sinful life, we must take him into the presence of Yamaraj for punishment. Therefore, there, according to the extent of his sinful acts, he will be punished and thus purified. They're basically saying, now we rest our case. This is why we're doing what we're doing. There's a few purports there I'd like to read. By speaking, this is in regard to his losing his Ajamil's losing his sense, like the sun and moon are eclipsed by Rahu, and he took the prostitute within his house as a quote servant. So his intelligence became fully engaged, scheming and plotting in the service of the mind and senses. Prabhupada's purport. By speaking this verse, Sukadeva Goswami wants to impress upon the mind of the reader that Ajamil's exalted position as a brahmana was vanquished by his association with the prostitute, so much so that he forgot all his brahminical activities. Nevertheless, at the end of his life, by chanting the four syllables of the name Narayana, he was saved from the greatest danger of falling down. Saupamapyasya damasya triyate mahato bhayat. Even a little devotional service can save one from the greatest danger. Devotional service, which begins with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord, is so powerful that even if one falls down from the exalted position of a brahmana through sexual indulgence, he can be saved from all calamities if he somehow or other chants the holy name of the Lord. This is the extraordinary power of the Lord's holy name. Therefore, in Bhagavad Gita, it is advised that one not forget the chanting of the holy name even for a moment. So it is not actually that we should just chant when we're in trouble. And there is a saying that if one chants when one is in difficulty, one chants Krishna's names when one is in difficulty, then that difficulty will be removed. And if one chants when one is not in difficulty, one will never be placed in difficulty. So we shouldn't be... much as we're capable, we shouldn't be involved in brinksmanship, bringing ourselves up to the edge and then Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, 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 Hare Hare. The best thing is to always chant Hare Krishna and stay free from difficulty. Therefore, the Bhagavad Gita advises that one not forget the chanting of the holy name even for a moment. Satatam kirtiyanto mam yatantastra dridavrita. There are so many dangers in this material world that one may fall down from an exalted position at any time. Yet, if one keeps himself always pure and steady by chanting the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, he will be safe without a doubt. Next purport. There are many instances throughout the world in which even a purified person, being attracted by a prostitute, spends all the money he has inherited Prostitute hunting is so abominable that the desire for sex with a prostitute can ruin one's character, destroy one's exalted position, and plunder all one's money. Therefore, illicit sex is strictly prohibited. One should be satisfied with his married wife, even a slight deviation will create havoc. A Krishna-conscious grihastha should always remember this. He should always be satisfied with one wife and be peaceful simply by chanting the Hare Krishna mantra. Otherwise, at any moment, he may fall down from his good position, as exemplified in the case of Ajamil. And then the final verse in this chapter, after the Yamadutas explained that they were punishing him for his sinful activities, for his own good, for his purification. And Prabhupada explains. The Vishnu Dutas had forbidden the Yamadutas to take Ajamil to Yamaraj. And therefore the Yamadutas explained that taking such a man to Yamaraj was appropriate. Since Ajamil had not undergone atonement for his sinful acts, he was to be taken to Yamaraj to be purified. When a man commits murder, he becomes sinful, and therefore he must be killed. Otherwise, after death, he must suffer many sinful reactions. Similarly, punishment by Yamaraj is a process of purification for the most abominable sinful persons. Therefore, the Yamadutas requested the Vishnudutas not to obstruct their taking Ajamil to Yamaraj. He committed so many sins. He must be punished. Brought to Yamaraj and punished. This is chapter 2. We'll now begin that. Sukadeva Goswami said, because he's narrating this to Maharaj Prakrit, "My dear king, the servants of Lord Vishnu are always very expert in logic and argument. After hearing the statements of the Yamadutas, they replied as follows." So the Yamadutas presented a very strong case. And here are the words of the Vishnudutas. "Alas, alas, how painful it is that irreligion is being introduced into an assembly where religion should be maintained." What? Immediately, the Vishnudutas are accusing the Yamadutas of introducing irreligion. "Indeed," they continue, "those in charge of maintaining the religious principles," the Yamadutas, that was their business, "are needlessly punishing a sinless, unpunishable person. He's done this, he's done that, robbed, cheated, stolen, prostitute, giving up his wife, eating sinful food." The Vishnudutas are saying that the Yamadutas are needlessly punishing a sinless, unpunishable person. "A king or government officer should be so well qualified that he acts as a father, maintainer, and protector of the citizens because of affection and love. He should give the citizens good advice and instructions according to the standard scriptures and should be equal to everyone. Yamaraj does this, for he is the supreme master of justice, and so do those who follow in his footsteps. However, if such persons, the followers of the king of justice, Yamaraj, who is Dharmaraj, king of religion, if such persons who are the deputies become polluted and exhibit partiality by punishing an innocent, blameless person, where will the citizens go to take shelter for their maintenance and security? The mass of people follow the example of a leader in society and imitate his behavior. They accept as evidence whatever that leader accepts. People in general are not very advanced in knowledge by which to discriminate between religion and irreligion. The innocent, unenlightened citizen is like an ignorant animal sleeping in peace with its head on the lap of its master, faithfully believing in the Master's protection. If a leader is actually kind-hearted and deserves to be an object of the living entity's faith, how can he punish or kill a foolish person who has fully surrendered in good faith and friendship? Ajamil, and here's where we'll stop. Ajamil has already atoned for his sinful reactions. He has committed so many sinful deeds, and yes, he was due for an incredible amount of punishment, but yet he has already atoned. Yamadutta just said he hasn't performed prayaschitta atonement. There are so many atonements prescribed in the Vedas which give not only what is religion and irreligion, but also the process for removing or atoning the sinful reactions, removing the sinful actions and atoning for the sinful deeds one has performed. That's also in the Vedas. That is also a part of religion. And he didn't perform any of those Vedic ritualistic atonements. So the Yamadutas are amazed. You're saying that he's sinless? You're criticizing us? Criticizing us? And yet he hasn't performed any atonement? Vishnadutas continue. Ajamil has already atoned for his sinful actions. Indeed, he has atoned not only for sins performed in one life, but for all those performed in millions of lives. For, in a helpless condition, with a full heart, in a helpless condition, he has chanted the holy name of Narayana. Even though he did not chant purely, he chanted without offense. And therefore, he is now pure and eligible for liberation. So in the next section, there are very, very sweet, wonderful, powerful verses and purports by Srila Prabhupada explaining and glorifying the potency of chanting Krishna's names. And tomorrow we will read those verses and see how fortunate we actually are. But now I'd like to go back and read some of Prabhupada's purports to those opening verses here. The Vishnudutas accuse the Yamadutas of violating the religious principles by attempting to drag Ajamil to Yamaraj for punishment. Yamaraj is the officer appointed by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to judge religious and irreligious principles and to punish people who are irreligious. He's empowered by the Supersoul to know exactly what one has done, good and bad, in this life. However, if completely sinless people are punished, the entire assembly of Yamaraj is contaminated. This principle applies not only in the assembly of Yamaraj, but throughout human society also. In human society, properly maintaining religious principles is the duty of the king's court or the government. Unfortunately, in this age, this yuga, Kali Yuga, the religious principles are tampered with, and the government cannot properly judge who is to be punished and who is not. It is said that in the Kali Yuga, if one cannot spend money in court, one cannot get justice. So expensive to go to court. So expensive. And if you get the proper, clever lawyer, even if you've killed somebody, he can explain it in such a way and poke holes in the argument of the opposition in such a way that it appears that you're a saint and that you've been victimized by someone or another. Clever lawyers making so much money to free guilty people. So in Kali Yuga, unless you have money like this, either to bribe the judge or the jury or something like that, or to get an expensive lawyer. If one cannot spend money in court, one cannot get justice. Indeed, in courts of justice, it is often found that magistrates are bribed for favorable judgments. Sometimes religious men who preach the Krishna consciousness movement for the benefit of the entire populace are arrested and harassed by the police and courts. The Vishnadutas, who are Vaishnavas, lamented for these very regrettable facts because of their spiritual compassion for the fallen souls. Vaishnavas go out to preach according to the standard method of all religious principles, but unfortunately, because of the influence of Kali Yuga, Vaishnavas, who have dedicated their lives to preaching the glories of the Lord, are sometimes harassed and punished by courts on false charges of disturbing the peace. And then in the next purport, Prabhupada says, because of the importance of this Krishna consciousness movement, people should be Krishna conscious and should not vote for anyone who is not Krishna conscious. Then there will be actual peace and prosperity in the state. When a Vaishnava sees mismanagement in the government, he feels great compassion in his heart and tries his best to purify the situation by spreading the Hare Krishna movement. Another purport. Although Ajamil was not punishable, this is text 4, the Yamadutas were insisting on taking him away to Yamaraj for punishment. This was a dharma, contrary to religious principles. The Vishnadutas feared that if such religious acts were allowed, the management of human society would be spoiled. In modern times, the Krishna consciousness movement is trying to introduce the right principles of management for human society. But unfortunately, the governments of Kali Yuga do not properly support the Hare Krishna movement because they do not appreciate its valuable service. The Hare Krishna movement is the right movement for ameliorating, removing the fallen condition of human society. And therefore, governments and public leaders in every part of the world should support this movement to completely rectify humanity's sinful condition. Srila Prabhupada had so much hope for the Hare Krishna movement. So much hope. People in general, this is the verse, they're saying, how could in this learned assembly, you know, everyone takes shelter, and if someone who has taken shelter, he has taken shelter of the Lord's name, Sajamil had actually, and if he's punished, it's like the keeper of the slaughterhouse who's fed the animals until the animals are thinking he is our well-wisher and provider, and then he kills them when they're fat. So how irreligious that is, taking someone into your shelter and then killing them. So Prabhupada's purport. The Sanskrit word Vishvastagata refers to one who breaks faith or causes a breach of trust. The mass of people should always feel security because of the government's protection. Therefore, how regrettable it is for the government itself to cause a breach of trust and put the citizens in difficulty for political reasons. We actually saw during the partition days in India that although Hindu and Muslims were living together peacefully, manipulation by politicians suddenly aroused feelings of hatred between them. And thus the Hindus and Muslims killed one another over politics. Prabhupada saw this. This is a sign of Kali Yuga. In this age, animals are kept nicely sheltered, completely confident that their masters will protect them. But unfortunately, as soon as the animals are fat, they are immediately sent for slaughter. Such cruelty is condemned by Vaishnavas like the Vishnadutas. Indeed, the hellish conditions already described await the sinful men responsible for such suffering. One who betrays the confidence of a living entity who takes shelter of him in good faith, whether that living entity be a human being or an animal, is extremely sinful, because such betrayals now go unpunished by the government. All of human society is terribly contaminated. So Prabhupada took the opportunity to point out how the improper understanding of the Yamadutas was quite parallel to the improper actions of the government. Because the Yamadutas are agents of the government of the Lord in the universe. Quite parallel. Because he had chanted, Ajameel had chanted the holy name of Narayana with a full heart, with full shelter, helplessly calling out, as Prabhupada said, like a baby crying for mother. There is a fullness of heart when a baby cries for his mother. And wherever the mother is, when she hears that baby crying with a full heart, she must come. Sometimes a child will cry with false tears, and then that doesn't have the same effect. One can tell when nothing's really the matter, he just wants some attention or some childish political maneuver. They do that. But a full-hearted cry, the mother must come. In the same way, Krishna must come when the devotee calls out. So the Vishnu Dutas must come to protect Ajameel because of his calling out in such a helpless condition. And immediately purified him for all those sins, and not only those sins, but sins that he committed in this life, but unlimited sins he had committed in previous lives as well. Okay, we'll stop here. Tomorrow, Krishna allowing, should hear some glorification of the holy name. Thank you. Any questions or comments? Yes.
Concept of punishment. Ajameel was punished so that he could become purified. And that's a very Old Testament kind of way of doing it. One,
the Old Testament follows the law.
Yes.
This is the law.
You steal so you get the handcuff, then everybody feels okay. I mean, it kind of it balances it out. But I guess that the modern way of thinking is that one is rehabilitated so that he doesn't do it again. He doesn't want to do it again. Not that he gets so frightened that he doesn't do it, because that doesn't take away the inclination. So I fail to see how punishment purifies. Mm.
But you also fail to see how saying the poor criminal, the poor fellow, he had to kill all those people because, you know, when he was young, his mother dropped him on his head or something. That doesn't seem to purify either. See, there's two things. One time, this isn't a confession, but I had the experience with another a devotee who had done something improper before he was chanting Hare Krishna. So so we went to the Justice Department, the judge, and we said to the judge that the purpose of punishment is rectification. And he's already been rectified, so there's no need of punishment. Because the question is, There's inside-out things. If one's heart is changed, then one is really, that's the ultimate rectification, the ultimate stopping of doing it. But so that was our argument. That's what I said to the judge. But the judge said, yes, but there's another principle too. And the other principle, that society has to have retribution for crime. The example must be set and shown to the public that if you perform acts against the law, this is what's going to happen to you. So Prabhupada once said in a similar way that you don't keep things locked up to stop thieves from stealing, but you keep things locked up to keep the honest people honest. So a person who is a thief by nature, who is an obsessive compulsive thief, if you chop his hand off, he'll steal with the other hand, and then you chop the other hand off and he'll steal with his toes, if he's really like that. But anyone who is innocent will go and think five times before he does something like that. And then society remains sane too, and it doesn't become chaotic. And secondarily, people who are not as compulsive, who have some tendency, that fear will stop them. But you're right that these type of things are not sufficient to completely purify the heart and remove the sinful tendency from the heart. For that, one needs a deeper purification. But because one does need a deeper purification, doesn't nullify that there is some benefit, and a required benefit, especially for the society. For having it strict. And the kings in the old days were strict. And even currently, no one in the states that are strict, maybe no one likes it, you know, a place like Singapore, but you won't find people bringing intoxicants into the country. Or even in New York City, where they became very strict on crime, zero tolerance type of thing. And there were some abuses of that. But the crime rate went down tremendously. Tremendously. And the ordinary citizens, they felt greatly relieved. So those are principles implied imperfectly. And ideally, one could apply them by a truly enlightened ruler. But that principle that there has to be some strictness to protect the ordinary citizen, otherwise they don't feel protected. Isn't that an interesting quote by Prabhupada? You don't keep things locked to stop thieves from stealing, but you keep things locked to keep the honest people honest. Interesting. Because if everyone could steal, you know, and if there's nothing happens to people steal, the ordinary people, you need something, you know, I said, well, everyone's doing it. It's such a tendency to say, well, everyone's doing it, why shouldn't I do it too? And that is not good, because then people who are innocent and don't really have that tendency become thieves. Then they get caught, and they get put in jail with a bunch of hardened criminals, and then they become hardened criminals. Any other questions or comments? Okay, tomorrow we'll hear about the glories of the Holy Name, if Krishna allows us. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Bhaktivedanta ki jai, Sinless Ajameel ki jai.